This is Taylor Talk, the number one Taylor Swift podcast, brought to you by TaylorTalk.org. Welcome, everybody, to episode 76 of Taylor Talk. My name is Adam.
I'm Maya.
I'm Diane.
And I'm Eric.
Hi, Eric.
Hi, Adam. This is all very formal all of a sudden. It's like, hey, we're gonna talk and only refer to each other as their first names.
Yes, precisely. So, real quick before we get going, I wanted to recap something. Because last week, I know Eric and Maya, you were not on that episode, but we had a fun... Well, I don't even know how fun it was. It was probably kind of a lame conversation about how we had never seen Taylor with her glasses on.
Ooh.
And there was an overwhelming enthusiasm for that discussion, apparently, because we had like a zillion different people send in pictures and videos and things like that of Taylor wearing her glasses. So that was interesting that we had such an enthusiasm for that. I just wanted to thank everybody for sending those in.
I'm looking at these photos. This is cute. This is really cute. These are cute glasses. Actually, there's two different styles pictured here. There's the thick black lenses and then the thin wireframe lenses that are ovals. I don't know. I think they're cute. I think she's got the right face for glasses.
Thanks, Eric.
Yeah, glasses don't ruin her happy
beauty.
Yes.
Yes. That was my argument in the last episode, but I didn't have the photos to prove it.
Mm. Now you do.
Turned out being right. Yeah.
Yeah, now I do. Exactly. So, Maya, could you please give us the news?
Sure. We only have one news item today, and that is that the CMA Music Festival Country's Night to Rock aired on Monday, August 12th, and if you missed it, you can check out the clips of Taylor performing in the episode guide on TaylorTalk.org.
That was a lot of news this week.
It was overwhelming. So much news. I'm tired already.
And that bit of news is actually interesting that Steve doesn't happen to be on this episode, because it turns out out of everyone here, Steve was the only one that was actually at that event.
Hmm.
So we have no one to actually talk about
it. The Night to Rock. We'll have to follow up on next week's episode.
Yeah.
Perhaps, Eric. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
As long as you're spieling along, can you give us the calendar?
Sure. So the please remember, if you're interested in the Taylor Talk calendar here, the 2013 MTV VMAs, it's the Video Music Awards, will air this upcoming Sunday, August 25th. Taylor is nominated for Video of the Year and Best Female Video for I Knew You Were Trouble. Voting is now closed. Thank you to everyone who voted. We hope that you got your votes in while you still could. You can't anymore. It's done. It's over.
Eric, you do that like a pro.
Thank you.
Yeah, he has been doing this for a while.
Almost like he does podcasts in other times. Crazy.
Actually, it's whoever created this document. Thank you. Thank you very much. Just like you're reading welcome. a script.
What do you mean you're welcome? I was the one that wrote it. You're taking
yeah, Eric, don't let Diane fool you. I did the doc this week.
I see.
I'm pretty sure Diane does it every week, but that's fine.
Well, Diane got some help this week.
So who wrote this part where it says tour updates, Diane?
That specific part was me, Eric.
So you should read it like a pro then, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Well.
Okay.
Now for the tour updates. The Red Show came to San Diego, California on August 15th, which was my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. The special song that night was 15 for all the people who are going to be freshmen in high school this fall. And then the Red Show will continue this week in Los Angeles, California on August 19th, 20th, 23rd, and the 24th.
That's four nights in California, in Los Angeles?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wow. And can you explain this process of the secret song?
Well, Eric, Mr. Newbie over here.
Oh, so, basically, oh, what? Did I just get booed by, like, everybody listening on this podcast?
Oh, no.
It's, you know what, Eric? I'm sure there are plenty of people who haven't seen the Red Show yet, but basically on the B stage, which is that stage that's, well, not the main stage, it's towards the back of the arena or stadium.
Sure.
She always does one song that's not in the normal set list, and it's typically one of her older songs.
Okay.
And that this particular time
is 15. Not necessarily.
Not necessarily, that's true.
It's a different song every show. Sometimes it's from requests. Sometimes it's just whatever she feels like doing.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, it's not in her normal set list, so it's just sort of a little added bonus to each show.
That's quite cool. I've never seen anybody really grasp that, because, you know, it must be boring or rather repetitive to do the same exact set list on every tour, but you kind of have to.
Right. Well, I mean, that is what you rehearse,
yeah,
right?
So this is something that kind of breaks away from that. Well, is it acoustic then, the secret song?
It is acoustic. It's her and her guitar.
Okay, so, I mean, yeah, she would know. That would be probably one of the easier things to do.
Yeah, and on the last tour, something cool she did was she covered artists from the local city she was playing in.
Yeah, I actually heard about that, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. Well, you missed the Chicago show, your local show, this tour, even though I tried to convince you to go.
Yeah, tickets were like $600. That was really a shame.
$600? Where were you looking for tickets?
That was Adam's friend, was selling tickets for like a little bit too much.
That's absurd.
Yeah.
It wasn't a little too much, Eric. It was $300 each.
I know.
For
it was really
That's
it was
still
like
absurd.
Retail. It was, yeah, I know. We couldn't make it. There was Comic-Con and
you
we
should
were...
have just gone on StubHub.
Oh yeah, and they would have sold it for $2,000.
I got a floor seat for the Boston show for $63.
My, what? How did you do that?
Because I have magical powers.
Wow.
Was that a single seat though?
Yeah, but there were doubles for like 90.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, speaking of floor seats, Adam, you tweeted a picture recently. Talk about your floor seats, man.
Well, we were in the pit, Diane and I, for this San Diego show, and it was just, we were really, really close, so that was kind of neat.
Kind of neat.
Really, really close.
Kind of neat.
It was kind of neat, whatever.
Like, close enough where I got to touch the red sign, you know, the one that has R-E-D in big red letters.
That's...
And Taylor, you also touched her.
Oh, yeah, she gave me a high five. That was neat.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
the pit, kind of cool. So, wait, Diane.
Yes.
This, I've heard from somebody else that it was your 22nd birthday.
It was my 22nd birthday, yeah. So I thought it was perfect to be there to hear her sing that song live on my 22nd birthday.
And she did?
Yeah, she did.
No, she didn't disappoint. She did. Okay.
No.
Well, Eric, that one is part of the set.
It's part of the... Oh, okay, okay. It's nice. Like, the secret song, gotta do 22, is my... All right, cool.
Yeah, no, that one's like a big production number.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see.
Does that one every night.
Well, I do. I must, just to give the listeners a little bit of an update too, since my last Taylor Talk appearance, which I believe was the all male episode of Taylor Talk, was that right, Adam?
That's the last time it was? Could be.
I think so.
Yeah, that was months and months and months ago. That was back in March.
Well, since then, I have actually listened to Taylor's albums. Yay! So I can weigh in just a little bit more, and I appreciate being invited back. But I'll actually know a little bit more about the artist in question. So I'm a little bit more qualified to be on this show, is what I'm suggesting. Because now I've heard her music. And I love the Red album. Really did.
Well, Eric, in all fairness, we did have you on the All Guys episode as a new member to the fandom here.
Yes.
So
yes, I was initiated. That was my purpose. Initiation. And then following that, I listened to her music. So that was good.
Now you're growing with us.
Mm-hmm.
So Maya and Eric, we started a new segment in the last couple episodes that you guys probably won't be familiar with, so I'll recap it for you as well as any new listeners. It's called Tell Me Why. We started an Ask FM account for Taylor Talk where people are asking questions, and this segment is literally just a roundtable discussion answering those questions.
Oh, I see.
Simple, right?
Mm-hmm.
People ask, we answer. Well, try to answer. Anyway, so this week we got a question submitted to us that says, do you think it's okay to dislike some of Taylor's stuff and still be a Swiftie? Also, do you think people should leave the Swiftie community if they begin to dislike Taylor's newer music as it evolves and her style changes, or stick around just in case? I mean, the first thing that jumped out at me was the stick around just in case, and it's like, just in case of what?
Just in case she goes back to the way she was before? Because I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think that's going to go away, but I don't think you should leave the community because you don't really like her new stuff. That doesn't make sense to me.
I think there's this elitism that's happening where, you know, kind of behind this question where if you don't like everything she ever did, you're not a Swiftie. I wouldn't necessarily subscribe to that.
I don't know. I don't think that's very healthy. Mm-mm. To just like love everything and not like think for yourself and like, I don't know. I think it's totally normal to be like, oh, I like this song a lot better than I like this song. Like, for example, there is a song on the Red album that I will not listen to because I dislike it that much.
Which one?
Sad, Beautiful, Tragic.
Okay. Oh, it's a good thing you weren't in that analysis.
Can't deal with it. I just really don't like that song. Yeah. And but like, does that make me not a fan? No. Like, I just, like, everyone has opinions. I think if you like every single thing she does and get angry at people for, like, having, like, free thought,
I should be the one to leave the fandom.
Well, this is a little too much. It ends with somebody's head either way. But this is why I kind of like, I enjoy sort of one-hit wonder songs more than artists that I try and track, because every artist has, you know, every artist who's around, you know, has a progression. They grow, their songs become either, you know, more complex or just different. You know, they change things up, they do different things, and it's not necessarily like it's not set in stone that you have to, if you like, you know, Taylor's first album, which I take it was probably more country, to now where it's, you know, kind of more pop. You know, they are two different genres with two different people, two different sets of people who will listen. And there are the people who can bridge the gap. You know, don't get me wrong. It's all, you know, as long as it's well written, you know, there will be enough people who like it no matter what. But, you know, it's not for everybody, and certain things aren't for everybody. And really, it's just like, you know, it's consumerism. We like the music because it moves us. If it stops moving you, then you stop listening. But it's not really one of those things where you like have to like everything she does.
Well, I think this question is also referring to a lot of the idea that we have to like baking and cookies and Law and Order and stuff that Taylor likes outside of her career as well. And I think that is a little weird also, that people are like, I've got a confession. Okay. As long as we're on this topic.
Do you like baking cookies is what you're about to tell us?
Well, I actually do love cooking and baking and stuff. Not baking specifically, actually more cooking.
Well, so you don't need to worry. You're not getting kicked out of the Swifty fandom anytime soon.
Oh, thank you, Eric. But I might after I make this confession.
Oh, no.
I can't stand cats.
That's because you're allergic to them.
Whatever the reason, I can't stand cats. And I feel like that is one of the biggest things in this community, that people are like, oh my God, you have to love cats because Taylor loves Meredith, her cat.
Well, I don't see anything about cookies or kitties or anything in this question from AskFM, but I understand where you're coming from.
Well, I see it in the question, Eric, because it's like, it says, do you think it's okay to dislike some of Taylor's stuff and still be, well, I guess that is so, probably referring to her music, but.
Well, stuff isn't, it could be stuff she likes.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is certainly, yeah, there's the potential for it to be broader.
Open for interpretation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think in general, just what I said, the music moves you. You know, and that's something that's very, I think it's clear to people who, you know, spend a lot of time listening to music or even hearing just the things that get radio played. It's clear who the good songwriters are, you know, and for something like that, just to get into the second half of this question, you know, should people stick around and see if it changes? What won't change is the skill in, you know, in the story, in the songwriting. That'll actually only improve. No matter what style she's writing for, it's still the same author behind it. So I think there is something to, you know, sticking around and seeing eventually she'll have a song that really touches you. Like, well, kind of what we're about to talk about on this show, just with, well, I won't spoil it. But, you know, I think something like that, the...
Eric, I think the title of the episode spoiled.
Oh, it's going to be I Almost Do is the name of the episode.
Yeah, that's the name.
So, like, I Almost Do, for instance, you know, it is off the Red album, isn't it?
Yes.
So I just heard this song and, you know, it was with the other ones that I had heard, like We Were Never Getting Back Together, all that stuff. It blew me away. I was moved by it. It touched on a personal memory. It was crazy. And I didn't expect it. And something like that, it's not really a pop song, even though the whole album is much more poppy than her previous work. It was just a song that hit me. And it's because of her writing. It's because of Taylor's writing. And so, yeah, I don't think it's strange at all to, quote, stick around. I don't think it's being somehow disingenuous, because you know who the good writers are, even if they're not writing something that you like. I could make the comparison with J.K. Rowling and Casual Vacancy. You know, she came around, she wrote Cuckoo's Calling, which is awesome. So it's like, even if you don't like everything that they write, you know that they're a good writer, and it's not shame or anything if you follow them still.
Well put, Eric.
That's what I do.
I agree.
That's all I can say. But no, like, to put a more concrete and definitive answer to that other part of that question, should people leave the Swiftie community? No. because I think there's so much more to the community than just liking Taylor's new music or something. If you still like her old stuff, you can form a niche group within the community, people that only like her old stuff, but you're still part of the community.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of Taylor Swift in any capacity.
I see that.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Thank you, Diane.
You're welcome.
So because Eric already spoiled our main discussion.
Ah, gosh, guys.
We figured we'd do an analysis of I Almost Do because it's Eric's absolute favorite Taylor Swift song.
Which is why he's on this episode.
Which is why he's back with us this week.
Did I send a text to you guys telling you that? Did you? Oh, it was right after I had listened to the album. And Adam and Diane, it was a group chat. And it was in text message. And you were like, what's your favorite song? And each of you were giving me your favorite songs and stuff. And I kind of said, well, it's, I Almost Do.
I actually think I still have that, Eric.
Oh, what, the texts? I would be very upset if you didn't, if you delete
still
my text.
It's probably somewhere far back in your text log. Like, don't even bother looking for it now.
But you guys gave me your favorites, and I said that at least off the Red album, which I had just listened to, and it's got great songs on it, don't get me wrong, but I mentioned this just a few moments ago. I Almost Do was that sleeper hit, kind of, for me. It's a slow song. Even listening to it, you know, earlier today, it was the first time in maybe a couple weeks that I'd listened. It's a slower song than you would expect, I think. It's not poppy. I love her happy, fast stuff. I love it. And it breaks that mold for me. It's a slow song. You know, I don't do well with slow songs, but this one in particular just hit me. So that's why it's my favorite.
Thank you, Eric. Maya, what do you think of it?
I'm sort of in a similar situation with Eric where I wasn't expecting this song, and it also sort of hit me on a personal level, and it's a situation that I could very strongly relate to. I mean, at the time, I think it's been a situation I've been in a few times, and I always love when she writes a song like that that's just very, it's not trying to be anything, it's not like trying to be a hit, it's just like, this is how I'm feeling right now. And like, she manages to sum up these big complicated feelings in, you know, these little tiny lines and these gorgeous songs. And yeah, this is definitely, it's one of my favorites for sure.
Cool. Well, something I kind of like about it, and I guess this also speaks to the Red album as a whole, is that it's part of the overall story of the album. You guys know what I'm referring to?
How do you mean?
Well, I just see it as being interconnected. We were talking about how Sad, Beautiful, Tragic the other week, Maya's least favorite song in the whole world that she hates and thinks never should have existed.
Yeah. Pretty much.
We were talking about how that, despite being a very different song, is interconnected with We Are Never Getting Back Together. In theme, it's about the same person, and it's about two different stages of that recovery. Sad, Beautiful, Tragic is where the male character is trying to get back together with her, and We Are Never Getting Back Together is where she finally says, no, it is absolutely not happening. And I think I Almost Do is like an in-between of those two songs. It's showing the other side of Sad, Beautiful, Tragic. Like, Sad, Beautiful, Tragic is the guy's trying to call and things like this. And then I Almost Do is showing her perspective where she is like, I almost do. She almost wants to answer. She almost wants to call him back. She almost wants to get back together with him. So it's like her response to the efforts portrayed in Sad, Beautiful, Tragic.
That is
so
interesting.
By extension, all the songs are together. And then finally, We Are Never Going to Get Together is the finale. Like, no, it's not happening.
Well, if I could, you know, comparing this to, I don't want to jump over in case Diane had something to say.
Oh, no, go ahead, Eric.
But if I could compare this to, you know, for instance, We Are Never Getting Back Together. Not for instance, that's exactly what I do want to compare it to. compared to We Are Never Getting Back Together, in that song, and there's a little bit of a, I think we talked about this in the guy episode a while ago, is that she has some songs that are kind of guy-hating songs, where she kind of, like, makes fun of us a lot. And there's that line in, is it the refrain, We Are Never Going to, was like, he calls me up and he's like, I still love you. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so annoying. Oh my God. you know, in this song, I Almost Do, it's not stated what the issue is between them. It's just something that you have to accept listening to the song. It's something that wouldn't work out. And if they tried again, it wouldn't work out. It's vague. It's up in the air. Not like, you know, We Are Never Getting Back Together, which is very obvious. He is flaky, unreliable, not somebody you can, you know, put your trust in or anything like that. So this song, I like it for its ambiguity. I like that, you know, it's not stated what went wrong between them, because then it's able to show just that emotion, that state of flux. And if you think about it, it's not even about an action. Most songs are about an action. This song is about inaction. It's about almost doing something, but not following through. And I like the way it's backwards that way.
That is interesting. That actually fits with the hidden message in the song, which is wrote this song instead of calling. So it's almost like, I mean, it is like she wrote this song as opposed to, you know, texting him or calling him or whatever. So it definitely is about, I mean, I guess it's like this song is the action that she almost took but didn't. So instead she wrote the song.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But that's why, I mean, just listening to it, and I think I must have had that feeling, because it resonated with me while I was listening, of, you know, things that could have been grand, like what Maya was saying too, these grand emotions that one experiences just, you know, in life or whatever. But things like wanting to call somebody, realizing it's not appropriate or not right, or, you know, just having these emotions that you don't act on. And that's something that's a little bit different, I think, than the subject of, you know, just some of the other songs out there. So as a subject matter, as, you know, the rhyme scheme, everything that I, you know, the refrain, I can get behind it. I think it just impacted me because of those, you know, sort of specific little reasons.
Well, I think you hit on something interesting, Eric, that I wanted to bring up. The fact that, you know, when you were talking about the ambiguity and things, one thing that allows this song to do is allow you to adjust the meaning of it to your life personally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in this case, that whole I almost do concept represents a general behavior. And I think that's what you were getting at, because you said it resonated with you.
Yeah.
I doubt you've been in a position identical to this one.
Right.
Yet somehow you were still able to relate to the emotion, the feelings in it. So I think that's what it was, is it's representing that general behavior of like you almost do something, but you know it's not good for you. So you kind of refrain. You find an outlet. Like in this case, the outlet for Taylor was wrote this instead of calling, where the outlet for someone else, if they're upset, might be hitting a punching bag or, you know, whatever the case may be.
There's also the, you know, in this song, there's this kind of shared history. You get the feeling that she knows whoever she's writing to. I mean, she says, I bet you're sitting in your chair by the window looking out at the city. That's very specific, you know, but it's like clearly whoever she's writing the song about or to, whoever it's addressed to, they know each other, you know, and they have this shared history. But even though they've already met and gone through all the steps of, you know, trying to work things out, it wasn't meant to be. But that familiarity never really goes away. You still know somebody even after you're no longer with them. You know, and you know things about them, you know how they behave, how they think. And the fact that she's longing for some of that closeness again, at least even in a little bit, and she's admitting to that, is really kind of special. And I think that goes more with anybody who's had a breakup, too. The fact that you still know a whole lot about people and their schedule if you've dated them, even though you're no longer maybe together.
That must be a weird feeling.
Right?
Just thinking about that.
Well, if you know where they work. For instance, like you don't go into like your ex's job or anything the way you may be used to or something like that.
Unless you need to buy something from a store they work at. I
mean, well, then you go to the other store, because odds are it's a chain, right?
Yeah. You can avoid them if you want to.
Perhaps. I don't know. Maybe not definitely.
But so something like that, you know, those lyrics, this song, for being so short, although I say it's short, but it is 4 minutes because they could pick up the tempo a little bit. But it's relatively uncomplicated in the lyrics. They're simple, but they're effective, you know, and they're not, it's almost like there's not a whole lot to the song, but there's so much to the song. It's really interesting. That's why I like it.
That's actually something we talk about with Taylor's writing in general. She does that in a lot of her songs.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That very like sort of simple, but deep.
Mm-hmm. Very
like she'll sum up like enormous complicated emotions in like two lines or like. There'll be, like, throwaway lines in a song that are, like, the biggest, most monumental thing. And you would never notice it unless you actually sit there and, like, take time. It's interesting. I don't know how she does it.
I wish Taylor was a host on this podcast. She's better with words than we are.
Yeah, she is.
But as long as we're getting into the lyrics, Eric, you shared some lyrics that stood out to you. Maya and Diane, do you guys have any lyrics that like really mean something to you or jump out at you or anything like that?
Well, to me, I think the saddest lyrics in the whole song are in, I want to say it's the third verse or the bridge.
I think it's the bridge.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking
about.
It's the bridge. Yeah.
In my dreams, you're touching my face and asking me if I want to try again with you, and I almost do. Like, that breaks my heart. I don't have anything else to say, except, I don't know, it's just like...
It just breaks your heart.
Yeah,
it stands out.
It just breaks my heart. It's, like... beautiful.
But I think it shows it shows her grieving phases. Like I said, how these songs are interconnected. That's that part where she's considering getting back together before We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense, Grace. I don't know if I'm completely sold, but I like it. I like it.
Wait, you're not sold on that, Eric? You're not sold
about his whole all the songs are interconnected is what I mean. I can see how it would definitely be plausible at the very, very least.
I think most of the songs are interconnected. I wouldn't say all.
No, they're definitely not all. Not every single song on the album, Eric. But there are certain songs about the same relationship that are, in fact, interconnected in different stages of it.
Hmm.
I mean, Taylor stated herself that she wrote, well, not all of this, but most of this album about one relationship.
Interesting.
So it makes sense that they would all go together. There's a few towards the end of the album that start to be about other things and other people. But...
hmm.
Besides that.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, but other than that, there are a handful of them that are interconnected, and I'm just trying to piece together the different stages that they took place, because like I said, I think Sad, Beautiful, Tragic and I Almost Do kind of happened at the same time, and then We Are Never Getting Back Together happened immediately after.
Yeah, I disagree with you about that.
Why?
I don't think Sad, Beautiful, Tragic, I can't even say it, that's how much I don't like it. Sad, Beautiful, Tragic and I Almost Do happened at the same time. Because Sad, Beautiful, Tragic is like looking back on it and sort of having like a reflecting moment.
I'm not saying necessarily they were written at the same time. I'm saying
I'm saying I don't think they're... No, but see, I Almost Do is... that's a thing that happens very recently right after the breakup happens. That's not something that happens later. That's the phase when you're telling all your friends you're fine and talking about how much of a douchebag that other person is, and then you're going home at night and staring at your phone and trying not to call them.
Right. Right before you become the assertive, we're never getting back together thing.
Right. This is the part, like, I don't know, one of my favorite thing about this song is that I feel like she wrote a song about, like, a stage of a breakup that you normally go through alone. Because that's the part, like, you're just telling your friends, oh, yeah, I'm fine, like, I'm so glad it's over, but, like, you're not fine at all. But, like, I like this song because, like, now I have someone to relate to when you get to that point in your life.
Well, at least you didn't agree that, or didn't disagree that We Are Never Getting Back Together was after this.
Well, obviously it's after that.
I'm just used to Maya disagreeing with
you. We Are Never Getting Back Together is the last step of the whole...
Well, just about the bridge that Diane mentioned, I guess this is the point of the bridge, but she uses I Almost Do as in a different way, because now it's part of...
Yeah.
Yeah, which I think is probably how all bridges work or something like that, but, you know, not knowing the music. But I think it's just clever to see how she uses the limited words that she's chosen.
You know, and Erica, as long as you're pointing out using the same words in different ways... something Diane pointed out to me before we even started recording was the first verse versus the last verse. And I wanted to see what you guys thought of this. Because in the first verse, the last line, it says, "And I bet you wonder about me." And then at the end, it's like she almost, I don't know, loses confidence or something and says, "And I hope you wonder about me."
I don't think she loses confidence. I think she's just being honest the second time.
Being more honest?
It's possible.
In the first one, is she not being honest, saying, "I bet
you
wonder about
me"? No, she's still
being
honest. Well, she's being honest to a point. I think she's sort of lying to herself. This whole thing is sort of about lying to yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then by the end of it, it's like, you know, I hope you're thinking about me too. Even though I shouldn't be thinking about you and blah, 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 whatever. But...
it's kind of what makes a song sad, beautiful, and tragic.
Oh. Oh my goodness.
I told you the two were interconnected.
I don't know.
Thank you, Eric.
It's the same song, Adam. It's the same.
Just make him happy.
I really do think there are two different sides to a story. I think one is
I can't say you're wrong. You know what? There's so many interpretations to everything. I wouldn't say that you're wrong. I would say it's probably probably a good thing.
Well, technically, we all have no idea who any of this is about because Taylor says she never reveals it.
Well, I think that's probably fine. I don't see how it has to be about anybody, right? You can imagine what you would feel if you broke up, but hey, whatever. It's probably more authentic and more real if you've actually been through the emotions. But if you're a good story writer, you can probably do a lot of that without having those experiences and still get away with it.
Yeah, I feel like her earlier work...
That's how Taylor used to write.
Yeah.
She said that she would watch because she didn't have friends, so she would just watch other people go through stuff and then write about that.
There you go.
Which is depressing, but...
Yeah, it's pretty sad, actually.
Yeah, I think her earlier work has more made-up stories than real experiences, and this stuff's more real in general.
I mean, but she still seems to, like, every album do a song that she admits that it's made up.
Mm. Well, like, yeah, in this case, it was Starlight.
No, I'm talking about Stay, Stay, Stay.
Yeah, oh, that was completely made up.
And Fearless. On Fearless is made up.
Fearless is made up? I didn't know that.
Yeah, Fearless is made up.
does it matter?
Well, now...
You know?
I mean, yeah, when she wrote it, it was made up.
Yeah. I think what matters is that the song moves you or doesn't move you, and for which reasons.
All right, I think that pretty much summed up all of our opinions on this song. So, moving on with the episode, we got our mini segments, and because we have Eric back with us, I thought it would be a great honor to have Eric read the first one.
How do I say this first word here?
I don't think he knows what that means.
Oh, you know you're a Swifty Wen. Sorry, that's the abbreviation.
It's like YKYASW. It's like...
Yes, just say that.
It's like ASL. I'm like, 25 male Chicago, what's going on? You know you're a Swifty Wen. Here we go. You know you're a Swifty Wen. Someone insults Taylor and you start crying.
Oh, wow.
That was texted in by someone who didn't give us their name. As always.
Jerks.
Those text messages.
All right. Our next submission is from Taylor's_Swifties1313 on Taylor Connect. And they said, you know you're a Swifty when you wake up and go to your phone to see if there's a new episode of Taylor Talk.
Aww. Only, too nice. You know, there's this great thing called subscribing on iTunes. Downloads the new ones every episode.
But maybe they're just so excited that they check anyways.
So excited. Well, Monday mornings is the official release time. So start checking Monday mornings.
And then there'll be an episode for you.
And then you'll be a Swiftie.
Yes.
Yay.
Not before.
Or after. No, well, yes, after.
Only
yes,
after. After.
Only after.
This next one comes from @hero_im_will. On Twitter, and they say, you know you're Swifty when your mother says to you, we need to talk. It's about your obsession with Taylor Swift.
Oh my God.
Adam, has your mother sat down with you yet about this?
Yeah, you know, my mom has on several occasions. She comes up to me, she's like, Adam, it's time for an intervention. Like, you are on a podcast about Taylor Swift. Like, there's a difference between listening to her on the radio and talking about her every week with a bunch of other freaks.
Becoming crazy.
Hmm. Ah,
nobody picked
acceptance.
Up the fact I just called you all freaks, but that was a joke. No, I'm kidding. My mom never has. Actually, my parents are very supportive of my love of Taylor.
Hmm. That's good. That's the way it's supposed to be.
They're very supportive of that. They're very supportive of Taylor Talk, so that's pretty cool.
They see how you're using your capable and vast talents to create something that's truly original.
Using my nerdiness.
Yeah.
To share more Taylor content with the world, as if there's not enough Taylor content out there.
Yes, nerd fuel.
Exactly. All right, so the next one is from @SwizzleJulie on Twitter, who said, you know you're a Swiftie when you stay up until 3 a.m. to watch the Teen Choice Awards, and then you're sad because Taylor's not there. Oh.
That was a bummer.
Was she slated to arrive and then never did, or what?
I think she
just
didn't
never
go.
Clear if she was going to go or not.
I think we assumed because of her nominations.
Oh, yeah.
She would be there.
Huh.
But
and she just, I guess, just decided not to go.
Well,
wanted to hang out with Meredith.
She was probably touring.
I'm sure she has a legitimate reason, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Well, they said it was because of her touring schedule, but then didn't Ed go?
Yeah.
And he has the same touring schedule.
I think she had a day off, actually.
Yeah, but considering Taylor's the headliner, I think she has a lot more responsibility. Like, Ed just kind of shows up with his guitar and his stuff, and he doesn't have
but
a band, he doesn't have dancers.
Schedule, so
he's
obviously that's not the reason. Yeah.
It's the same schedule, but he doesn't have as much work to do on that tour.
But he does shows outside of those shows, and she doesn't.
Because Ed has more energy?
It will forever remain a mystery.
Taylor needed to go to Rhode Island, I guess.
Well, our next comes from Sophie via the email address that I'm sure we will read at the bottom of the show. Sophie says, you know you're a Swiftie when your lucky number was 13, even before you knew that it was Taylor's. True story. Well, Sophie, you must have felt really lucky. Mine is 17, in case anybody's wondering.
Mine is 15.
Mine is 7.
Mine is 7. You stole mine.
Oh, 7 yeah, was my favorite number before
you.
So cute.
What was your number before you read Harry Potter?
My number's always been 7, Eric. It's my birthday, the 7th.
Okay. Okay.
Eric, you're going to appreciate this person's name. This one is from Taylor_Potter Ooh. On Taylor Connect. And they said, you know you're a Swiftie when you yell at the store people because they interrupt Taylor's song at Walmart. I'm just having a vision of like someone standing in the middle of Walmart like yelling at the loudspeaker.
That's me, actually, almost every time I go. I have so many reasons, and they're all legit for yelling at the loudspeaker person. But I can see how that would cause some frustration there, sure.
That happens to me on airplanes. When they get on the PA system on airplanes, it drives me nuts.
One time I was at a train station and there was a lady and she was arguing with the train schedules over the loudspeaker.
What?
Was she
like
alone?
She was yelling at the loudspeaker and telling them that they were lying about the train schedule. Yep.
Crazy people.
This next one comes from some fearless chick on Taylor Connect, and they say, you know you're Swiftie when you've listened to Everything Has Changed so much on the album that it's weird not to hear Ed go, we good to go on the radio version.
He doesn't do that on the radio version?
He does do that on the radio version. That person just not listening to the radio version.
Let's edit this to say, you stop, you know you're Swiftie when you've listened to it so often you stop hearing Ed say, we good to go. You're so used to it.
I thought he did say it in the remix.
Speaking of that, Maya, you've obviously heard it on the radio. I finally heard it on the radio, and I totally forgot to mention it, because several episodes back, we were speculating on whether or not the remix was created in the first place to go to U.S. radio. Mm-hmm. And I think that is, I think we more or less, I don't want to say we confirmed it, because it hasn't come from an official source, but that is the version that plays on the station here.
That's the version that I've heard as well.
Yeah, so I will neither confirm nor deny it, but that is the version on the radio. Anyway, last submission for this episode comes from RedTSwift13, who emailed us and said, you know you're a Swiftie when you go skiing on a really steep slope, and the first thing that you think is, this slope is treacherous, this path is reckless.
Song lyrics.
Well, it could be treacherous if there's lots of trees. You don't want to hit a tree, right?
That's why I don't
definitely
ski.
Definitely could be treacherous. Yeah, I don't ski either. It scares me.
I love skiing.
Although, I go to school in Boston, so I guess I really should.
Maya, you and Diane need to both learn. I'll give you both lessons.
My best friend is, like, obsessed with skiing, and she tries to get me to go every weekend, but I just...
Every single weekend? I'm surprised you haven't gone yet, just to get
she
her to
She goes every weekend, and she's like, I'm going skiing, come with me, and I'm like,
Well, just tell her next time that every time you don't, you almost go.
I will tell her that, and she's gonna be like, shut up.
Oh.
But that's okay.
You and your Taylor puns. Well, I'll teach you guys to ski. I've been skiing since...
Birth?
Since before most people listening to this show have been alive. Actually, I've been skiing since before Diane's been alive, and probably, possibly Maya as well. So, I've been skiing since December 1990.
Yeah, I wasn't alive.
I wasn't alive.
Wow.
I think that was the month... No, I'm not going to say anything. Never mind.
The month you were conceived, I could hear that coming a mile away.
How did you know?
What else could it be? What else could it really, really, really be? That's funny.
Oh, jeez.
Little baby Adam is on his skis. And your parents are having a romantic candlelit dinner. There you go. There's food for thought.
Oh, my gosh, Eric. I'm debating whether or not. No, I'll leave this in the episode.
Find out.
Anyway, so our next segment, what are Swifties listening to? Oh, it's actually a back-to-back from Red T Swift 13 in that email, who suggested everybody go listen to The Heart of Dixie by Danielle Bradbury. And I wanted to include that in the episode because Danielle Bradbury is one of the, if not the newest, addition to the Big Machine family. So,
yeah.
Shout out to her. Go give her a listen. It's a good song.
Cute song.
Catchy.
I like it. She walked past me at the Philadelphia show.
Oh, really?
I was just standing there, and then these bodyguards come walking by, and then this blonde girl goes by, and I'm like, wait, I just saw her on TV last week. I know who that is. But I was wearing my costume, so I didn't want to, go over and talk to her.
That reminds me of the time I was at the ACMs in Vegas, and we saw Cassidy Pope talking to Taylor Swift, and I had no idea who it was, and I was walking out of the arena with her, and I'm like, I really want to know who this girl is that knows Taylor Swift. And I was, literally walking out next to her.
You can't really ask that. Hey, excuse me, who are you? Yeah. Why are you important?
Yeah.
Why are you here?
Well, I do know who she is now, if it counts for anything.
Yeah.
Of course, it's after the fact, but what are you going to do? So our last segment of the episode, Eric, I've been saving this for weeks, waiting for you to be available.
I'm so relieved, or I'm honored.
So the pressure is all on you now. It is it's a What Would Taylor Do question that was submitted to our Ask FM account. And they asked, what would Taylor do if she was in Draco Malfoy's position? Would she let herself be forced into becoming a Death Eater, or would she accept Dumbledore's offer of protection and join the right side?
Can I reply with a generic she would almost just to be funny? I think that I don't know. It depends on her loyalty to her family, which I don't know if there's any songs about that immediately that jump out about talking about her family. But Draco's big position and the reason that he was so conflicted, I think, was due to the fact that both his parents were really, really, I don't want to say evil, but they were on the Dark Lord's side, and so he was conflicted just because he really didn't know any different from being raised that way. So, and he felt that he was in it too deep. So I think anybody in Draco Malfoy's position would have behaved pretty much just as Draco did, because the situation was so tough to really navigate. But fortunately, it all worked out in the end.
I think Taylor is far less of a coward than Malfoy is, though.
Yeah, but if she left her family, I mean, I just can't see her doing that. She's really close with her mom. She's close with her dad. She's close with her brother. If she left them and went to the good side, she would never be able to talk to them again.
I guess now that you mention it, I didn't even think of the family angle. I was just strictly comparing Taylor to Malfoy. But now that you bring in the family thing, it occurred to me that the family would be at risk, because if Voldemort finds out that Taylor went to the good side, went to Dumbledore for protection, and her family was still under his regime, they'd be at risk. He would use them against her.
We're all secretly Harry Potter fans. We're talking. People get it.
Eric, there's been plenty references to Harry Potter in this podcast in the past, And in case anybody was wondering why this question was specific to Eric and why all the jokes at him, he hosts a Harry Potter podcast called MuggleCast, which you guys have your last episode coming up, so I guess a plug here is kind of irrelevant. Oh. But
everybody go listen to the final episode of an 8-year-long podcast called MuggleCast.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I started listening to MuggleCast about 2 episodes ago. I realized how late I am on the band.
You started selling shirts for us 8 years ago.
No, I've only been selling the shirts for you guys for
7 years?
7 years since Lumos.
Yeah, six or seven years.
My bad. Sorry, I over-exaggerated there.
I have yet to listen to an episode.
You have been a friend of the show for as long as I can remember, as far back as I can recall. You are among our oldest friends of the show.
Well, Eric, if it makes you feel any better, I did jump on the bandwagon eventually.
That's because you heard you got mentioned on one of our episodes, right?
Yeah.
You did get a name drop, but I think it was worth it. I forget who did it.
Adam's so vain.
All right, anyway, we're so off topic. Maya, what do you think Taylor would do if she was in Malfoy's position?
I don't know. I think you're right that she has a strong enough connection with her family that I think she would stick by them, is my sense. It's hard for me to put Taylor Swift and Harry Potter into the same universe, but yeah.
Well, really, it's all just one universe, isn't it?
Well, that's deep, man.
But yeah, it's a tough call, isn't it? An interesting question at that. But I mean, that's what What Would Taylor Do's are about, is random, obscure questions that make no sense in reality.
Boom.
Yeah. So thank you for submitting that. Remember, guys, you can submit to all of our mini segments in various ways. You can email us, taylortalk@taylorswift13.org. You can Facebook us, tweet us, Taylor Connect us, or of course our new way, Ask FM, is all the usernames on those accounts are TaylorTalk13, so go find us there. You can leave us a voicemail or text message to area code 240-31-SWIFT, or you could leave a voicemail directly on the website, taylortalk.org, and in case you forgot any of those methods, as I almost did in the middle of that spiel there. Sorry. They're all on taylortalk.org. There's a contact tab at the top, and it lists all those different methods of contact for you. So contact us. Call us, beep us if you want to reach us.
Oh, that was my favorite reference in this whole episode.
Me too.
So for episode 76, this has been Adam,
Maya,
Diane,
and Eric.
Thank you for joining us, Eric.
I almost wasn't going to. But then I did.
Oh. Yeah.
I overcame it.
Good. I'm
so
glad.
No, it was good having you, Eric.
Thrilled to be invited back. Thank you, guys. And we'll do it next time for my next favorite song.
Yay. Yeah. That'll be in like a couple years whenever she has another album.
Yeah.
Cool. So have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 This podcast is not directly affiliated with Taylor Swift.